So two things before starting. We just ended an 8-day retreat last Sunday, and my throat, my voice is a little bit wobbly, so as long as it holds up, I'll keep going with this talk. And then the second thing is, the talk might be a little longer than a Saturday morning wants. So I may stop before it's actual end, so that there's time for questions and or comments. You know, and this is referring to a question that someone asked me about sutras, the classical sutras, wondering why they all started with, "Thus I heard." So this is a little bit of a response to that question. It is Ananda, a cousin of Shakyamuni Buddha, who memorized and could recite hundreds of discourses given by the Buddha. As Shakyamuni was nearing his death, Ananda asked him if there was a particular way or a particular fashion in which he should start the many sutras that he had memorized. Shakyamuni Buddha said, "Start with Shrutan." So start with Evan Maya Shrutan, and I'm sure that's not how you say those words. But that translates for us into, "Thus have I heard." This opening phrase gave an authenticity to the sutras after the Buddha died. Those early disciples, I imagine, took some comfort in knowing exactly what their teacher, and in time, their teacher's teacher said. With any question a practitioner had, the head monk, nun, or community elder could say, "This is what he said when he was sitting with us. This is what he said when he was walking with us. This is what he said when he was living with us." I think, however, over time, this isn't enough. A community and each individual needs to find her or his own voice of expressing, of articulating this life of practice. At some point, it isn't enough to offer up dead words. I imagine some of us moved away from our family's religion because the words and actions did not feel real or authentic or alive. It was as though the priest, rabbi, or minister was reciting only from the institution's memory of a once upon a time genuine, enlivening experience. They were reporting on the experience someone had who had touched the noumena, or who had been touched by the finger of God. This telling of a distant past experience may have sounded to us sitting in the pews or in the congregation or in the synagogue as something possible, maybe even something desirable. It may have even awakened a thirst we had but didn't know about. And unfortunately, many of the priests, rabbis, and ministers had not drunk from this fountain either, so their words were filled with sleep and ennui. They were about an almost forgotten, distant past. The Buddhist sutras, though, do not let the past reside in dust, almost forgotten like a long-ago dream, laid down and never told. They carry the past forward and lay it at our feet here, now. And it does this because they map the neural pathways of the enlightened mind. They map the neural pathways of the enlightened universe, which is vast and boundless and not contained by linear and concretized constructs such as space and time. Time and space are at once vast and boundless in the sutras, and also so vast and boundless as to be almost non-existent. Each thing and anything that has ever happened, been born, has died, exists still, right here, now. In our daily lives, we sometimes actually believe that there are only 60 seconds in a minute, and 60 minutes in an hour, and 24 hours in a day. We think that time moves from the distant, forgotten past to the unknown future. We actually think that spring becomes summer and that life becomes death. But with even a short taste of a Saturday sit, we realize that a second or a minute can not only feel but be longer than a day. And we can realize a morning can actually be a full lifetime. The sutras annihilate our little, literal, and concretized understanding of time and space. I'm reminded of a story that when an eminent Buddhist elder was asked what he thought caused the Big Bang, he immediately chuckled and said, "Which one?" So time and space, like thoughts, feelings, and sensations, like you and me, are vast and boundless. And in the Buddha's world, which is the world right here, there is time and space, but also no time and no space, just as there are no thoughts, no feelings, no sensations, and no you over there, and no me over here. Because space and time are so vast and boundless, so permeable and porous, the Buddha can pick up a speck of dust and know that it contains the entire universe. When past, present, and future are obliterated, all things exist only right here, now. In our kitchen here at the house, we have a calligraphy by Thich Nhat Hanh that says, "In this food, I see the entire universe." This is not only true because when you look at a piece of food, you see the farmer, or her husband, or the delivery boy, and so on. It is because when time and space are stretched to breaking, when there is no time and no space, this, and this is all there is. And if you're not sure about this, then please show me the past. If you're not sure about this, please show me the future. a lovely poet who I highly recommend reading, Ellen Hinsey, in her lovely and heartbreaking book titled The White Fire of Time asks, in what tense should I speak of the present? We can say I did, or I shall, but we can only say those things now. We did and we had in the present. We will have only right now. And to even call the present and actually think we know what that is a mistaken notion at best. When time and space collapse, then the Kuan Yin sitting on the altar takes your seat. When you bow, she bows. When the Buddha eats his own meal, your stomach is full. When you wash your dishes, his bowl is cleaned. In this manner, we are not like Kuan Yin. In this manner, we are not like Shakyamuni Buddha. In this manner, we are Kuan Yin. You are Shakyamuni Buddha. In the Dokusan room, the interview room, we are not taking up a koan involving dead folks from centuries ago and their dusty conversations. They are each one of them in the Dokusan room too. Sometimes you as Jiao Zhou and me as Nan Chuan. Sometimes Yun Men arrives, sometimes Bodhidharma. But at all times, you and I are also present. Incidentally, the Dokusan room, the interview room, takes its name and its dimensions from Vimalakirti's hut. The old layperson Vimalakirti was sick. Manjushri and a numberless number of bodhisattvas went to visit and inquire about his health. After an outrageous, funny, and quite beautiful exchange about non-duality, Vimalakirti invited the throng of hundreds into his 10-foot by 10-foot hut for tea. One sensible bodhisattva said she was worried that they might not all fit comfortably, but the old layman told her to not worry about such matters. So they entered one by one, and each was seated on a throne which was tended by an innumerable number of helpers. And each throne had smaller thrones circling around it, also tended by an innumerable number of helpers and so on. And all fit comfortably, and all still felt spacious, boundless and free. It was quite a wonderful situation. And when you enter the Dokusan room, which is exactly 10 feet by 10 feet, when you enter, all enter. Nothing is left out. When you enter, all are already present. Interviews with the teacher present the chance for you to show all of yourself. It is a unique time and, of course, can be used to talk about life and situations and ideas. But it can also be charged with the possibility of presenting you as all of you, with no prior thought with no meaning, with no formulations or contrivances. You can show yourself with no height. You can show yourself with no sex. And you can show yourself with no race, with no age. And what a challenge that type of showing is. But what a joy. What a challenge to show your heart mind as vast and boundless as Vimalakirti Sat, as vast and boundless as the Buddha Sutras. And whether successful in this endeavor or not, and how can you be successful? What a joy to meet with another with that intention. So Ananda said, Evan Maya Shrutam, thus have I heard. This is a historically accurate translation, but I think it poses an incomplete understanding. This translation stands in the world of past, present, and future. Or Evan Maya Shrutam. Another way to translate that is, thus I hear, which is an equally accurate translation. Try that for a moment now. Thus I have heard. Now, thus I hear. I have heard thus. I hear thus. I have heard thusness. I hear thusness. I find I enjoy both ways. Thus I have heard. The words of Ananda come to me from a distant and lovely dream, a dream I am overly fond of and enjoy hearing. They remind me of my dad telling soft stories of his grandfather in Scotland and Ireland. There is a familiarity, a vague knowing of the story, a gentleness like silent rain moving over the mountains to fill the empty valley below. They are of time and place, as am I, and as are you. And then, thus I hear. I hear thusness. With these words, sutras come forward immediately as the sound of calling ravens. They come forth immediately as sunlight sparkling on green roofs. They come forward immediately as an early morning owl calling four times from the distant hillside. They come forward as rivers ripping through towns on the west side of the Cascades. And they come forward as rotting wood and standing still stones. Thus I hear past, present and future fall away, and there is only just so. The literal translation of the word heaven. Thus, just so. It is, you are, just so. The sutra, so. Each one of you the way you are and are not, the way you will be and never will be, just so, thus. So I'm going to stop there, and if anyone has a question, comment, I'm happy to give it a try, and then in a little bit we can, I guess you just do kinin, go back, you know, do kinin, close with the sutra, and then go back to zazen, and I'll switch rooms and start doing dokusan in my 10-foot by 10-foot hut.